Lily, no, 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 no. You do not trim these hedges from top to bottom, but from bottom to top, as we've discussed.
Many times.
All right, I'll trim the bushes myself. Then you can cut the grass.
You cut the grass yesterday?
Yes.
What can I do for you, Ms. Lawler?
I request a formal introduction.
Come with me.
Are you firing me?
You should be so lucky.
Miss Sherman, the thought of leaving my obituary to chance is completely unreasonable to me.
Well, I am the obituary writer, so when the time comes, I will be writing her obituary.
I want you to write it now.
Huh.
Here's the names of a few hundred people.
My name is Ann Sherman. I'm from the Bristol Gazette. I'd like to talk to you about Harriet Lawler.
Now, the deceased should be loved by their families. There's an ex-husband. He's a jackass.
As I live and breathe.
Well, from the looks of it, I'm not sure you do. The deceased must have touched someone's life.
I hated her so much.
If I want your opinion, I will give it to you. That's what she told me. I was her gynecologist.
If there's just one thing you could say about her that's nice.
If she were dead, that would be nice. How's that?
She puts the bitch in obituary.
How grossly I overestimated your talent as a writer.
The problem isn't with my writing. That was just me writing about your life.
My life is not over yet. You are going to help shape a legacy. This is what we have to find a youth to mold. And that will be the person whose life I touch.
You got busted for drunk driving, didn't you?
Excuse me?
You're white and you're here.
When I was a kid, I loved the radio. I'd like a job as a disc jockey.
And what kind of music would you play?
The right question would be, what would I play after I played the Kinks?
And who is this?
It's my intern.
What up?
Did I just lose my job to a 100-year-old woman?
This is Harriet Lawler saying, please don't have a nice day.
I don't know if I can write your obituary. I'm just not ready to close this chapter of my life.
Have a day that matters. Have a day that's true. Punch it! Have a day that means something.
Harriet, you're a piece of work.
I am who I am.
Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of Podcasting Them Softly. Today, I'm joined with screenwriter Stuart Fink, who most recently penned The Last Word, starring Shirley MacLaine, Amanda Seyfried. I hope I said that right. That's the first time I've ever said her name aloud. So, we'll see.
I think it's fine.
Okay. And Jewel Lee Dixon, Thomas Sadowski, Tom Everett Scott, and the amazing Philip Baker Hall. The film was the latest one from one of my all-time favorite filmmakers, Mark Pellington, who some of you may remember was our first guest on Podcasting Them Softly. Welcome to the show, Stuart. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We've been going back and forth on the Facebook about movies and all sorts of stuff for quite a while, and it's great to have you on because I thoroughly enjoyed The Last Word. That was a very good film, and I am very excited to talk to you about it.
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, that's great to hear, and yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. But yeah, it's great to finally talk to you after a couple years of liking all of your posts.
Well, I appreciate that you like my posts. I like to think that most of the stuff that I put up, I think we're pretty like-minded when it comes to film and similar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Similar sensibilities, you know, politics, which we don't really need to go there, and other stuff like that. But this is your first screenplay that was produced, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And have you written other stuff prior to this?
Yeah. Yeah, I had written, before this one happened, and it was actually one of my very first scripts that Mark read and liked it, and, it was the kind of thing that nothing really ever happened with it, but later on, when we were talking, he introduced me to his producing partner at the time, Anne-Marie Mackey, and she was like, oh, I really like that script that you wrote a few years ago, and I was like, that's fantastic idea, and I pitched her basically The Last Word, her and Mark, and they were like, yeah, that's good, write that, that's a pretty good idea. And that's sort of how the whole thing happened.
Wow. So what was the genesis of The Last Word? Where did you come up with this?
I seem to remember when Elizabeth Taylor died, and I don't remember exactly when that was, but I seem to remember when she died, it occurred to me that her obituary had probably been written 20 times over the years, because I think she was someone who had a lot of health issues, and, you know, she was whoever the celebrity today is who's always in the news for health issues, whatever. Like, I think people thought she could have died many, many times throughout the years. So anyway, that idea, I thought it was kind of interesting, the idea of obituaries, writing obituaries from people who were still alive. And that was sort of an idea or a thought for maybe not even longer than 5 minutes, when I realized, well, what's potentially way more interesting is who would be the type of person who would want to have their obituary written while they were alive. And so I sort of just asked myself that question, and then literally answering it was sort of how I created the character of Harriet Lawler. And then the sort of movie just sort of came from that character.
And where did you, along the lines, come up with putting music into this film? And that's a gigantic part of the film.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it was sort of something that, I love music, and Mark, who, and we could talk about this later, who I've known for a long time, obviously he's a big music guy as well. Mm-hmm. So I've always been sort of in love with college radio stations. I mean, that was sort of my music growing up, was a station in Oxford, Ohio, called 97X. And I just sort of loved that idea. And then I loved the idea of this character, something like that she loved, something unexpected. And so the idea of someone who grew up, you know, saw Elvis on TV, and it changed the world, and then later the Beatles, and then the idea of listening to music on the radio, and the idea of disc jockeys having the power and the control to sort of sequence, you know, your emotions and how you're going to feel. I just thought it was a really interesting area to sort of explore. And then obviously the idea of having to be, you know, an 81-year-old woman entering this world and sort of making it her own seemed like a lot of fun. It's definitely an area that Mark and I talked a lot about. And so it was really important to the script. And then the other really great thing about the movie, I think, is obviously the soundtrack. And, mm-hmm. as Harriet talks about the emotions that different music can play, sort of that rock block, I think, you know, Mark and the music supervisor, Liza Richardson, I think they sort of, you know, took that in a way to heart. And it flows just like an unbelievable mixtape, with just tons of different genres and styles, eras. And I think but it holds together, I think, just beautifully. It's really cohesive. So I think they did an amazing job on that.
When you're originally writing this, did you have anybody in mind for any of the characters while you were writing it? That's one of my favorite questions to ask writers.
Yeah, I did. I wrote this for Shirley MacLaine.
Wow.
I love her. The Apartment is, you know, one of my all time, you know, like top two favorite movies of all time. But more to it, I told her this because I wrote her a letter, and I told her that the thing about a lot of her movies and her characters are they're literally indelible. Like, you just can't stop thinking about them. And many of them, you sort of are like, oh, I wonder what their life is like now. Like, what happened after the credits rolled? And, you know, and that you don't feel that way necessarily with every actor, you know, or every character, even though you may like that movie better or that actor better or whatever, sometimes things stick with you and for whatever reason. And she had a couple of characters like that. And so it was sort of like, well, what if that sort of type of character, strong, no-nonsense, the smartest person in the room, you know, what if she was now, you know, 80 and looking at the end of her life, and who would that be interesting to be? And I was like, well, that would be Shirley MacLaine. I want to see what she's like now. And yeah, from the beginning, like, she was definitely the person I had in mind. But which is like, not to say like I wrote it specifically for her, because at the time, obviously, I had never written anything or produced anything. I had no way of getting it to her. At first, I just had to write it. But I definitely was like, this would be great for Shirley MacLaine, and she was who I had in mind when I was writing it.
What did it feel like when Shirley MacLaine was locked in?
Well, it's amazing. And like, really, so I had a really great experience in that Mark invited me to the whole thing. So I stayed at his house, and I was with him throughout the entire production, including all of the shoot days. You know, I just sort of sat in the back and just watched. But like, real, like the first day, the first minute, just seeing her locked in. And I think the first thing we shot was her walking into Tom Everett Scott's office. You sort of like, I just sort of remember thinking like, oh, that's her character now. Like, she owns that, you know. And it was just like amazing. And it's just seeing the transformation. It's so different. Whatever's on the page is the page, but what she was able, I mean, all of the actors, what they're able to do to bring it to life and bring everything to the fore, it's really just remarkable to behold. And then you just, of course, are amazed at the fact that it's Shirley MacLaine, and she's, you know, delivered lines by, you know, Billy Wilder and James L. Brooks and whoever. And then you just sort of trip out completely, because that's nuts.
I could imagine, man. She's such a legend. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And she's fantastic in this film. I mean, holy crap. I'm sure I'm going to be the millionth person to tell you this, but, and I hope you don't take offense to this, which I don't think you would, but this certainly feels like an extension of Aurora Greenway in a way.
Yeah. I mean, and that's sort of what I was talking about, was like those types of characters. I mean, and it wasn't really at all a conscious decision or like a real conscious thought, but it was like, you know, this woman has played these types of characters before. Now let's see them at the end of their life, looking back on it. And do they have regrets? And would they do it differently? So it was, you know, it was sort of borrowing, no doubt. And I thought Mark just did a remarkable job somehow bringing that to life. But it's like, it's the iconic nature of Shirley MacLaine and her history and the shared history that, you know, sort of the audience has with her. I think it definitely sort of plays on that to a certain degree.
And how did you first connect with Mark Pellington?
So, that's a funny story. And like probably a lot of people my age, your age, maybe I grew up with his videos, on MTV and his promos that he did as well for MTV. So I was like a fan. I mean, I was taping stuff of his in college and showing it to people in my dorm. so then, like, years later, I'm working in advertising, which is my day job, as a writer, you know, writing commercials and stuff. And it was my very first commercial that I sold for, this is how long ago, it was for GeoCities. You know, those like build your own homepage. This is like the first company. Yeah.
Oh my God. So, yeah.
Yeah. Right. So it was GeoCities. I wrote these spots and I was, you know, I was like 23. And I was, you know, I was really young it was my first commercial. I didn't know anything about that world. And the producer read them and was like, oh, we should get Mark Pellington to direct these. And I was like, are you serious? Like, no way. And sure enough, he did. He directed them. And check this out. Harris Savides was the DP on them, which was, you know, again, just amazing. And so that's how Mark and I met, is we met doing those commercials. Because he also, you know, he works in that world as well, like a lot of directors do. And we stayed in touch and we became friends. And then, as I was saying earlier, then a few years later, I wrote something which he liked. And so then he started to know that I wanted to write. And then I just hired him. I just kept hiring him because he's one of my favorite directors for commercials and public service announcements. We did a gun control campaign a few years ago that's, you know, like, it just imagine the director of Jeremy doing a gun control spot. It was killer, no pun intended. So that was amazing. So we just, you know, we just stayed friends and a lot of similar interests and whatnot. And he is a great guy. I mean, he was the, you know, the guardian angel of this whole thing and looked out for me. And it was amazing. I owe him a ton.
Yeah, you know, not to the degree of you, but I'm very grateful for him for being our first guest on our podcast, geez, 2.5 years ago. And that really kind of opened the doors for us to have other people come on, because it's like, well, we had Mark Pellington on. And
right.
But he was like, oh, wow, you know, sure, I'll be on your podcast. Yeah, he's a very sweet and generous guy.
Absolutely. And if you just know him like by his work, maybe before, you know, the last word, you may think he's just like, you're just, you know, scary, intense, dark guy.
Oh yeah.
But he's so sweet, and he's just like, I believe like he's just a real artist. Artist. It's unbelievable.
Without a doubt. I mean, I Melt With You is one of my favorite films of all time. I just, holy cow. So I was so intimidated to talk to him because I was expecting, you know, almost this dark, brooding guy. And he's just like, you know, this sweetheart. And he's, like you said, he's an artist. I can't say enough good things about him. And the funny thing is I remember when he announced he was doing this, and I was just like, oh my God. Like, you're making a movie with Shirley MacLaine? What? And then all he told me was, it's about death. I was like, oh, okay. I guess this isn't what I thought it was going to be. But anyway, so how difficult was it to, and I think you should be incredibly proud of this, you wrote an R-rated film that got a theatrical release.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a superhero. I shouldn't even say it's a superhero movie. You know what I mean? It's not like a war movie or, geez, a drug-induced, alcohol-induced bender comedy. These are rarities, man.
I know. I'm really, like, I'm just, it's pretty funny because the entire experience, like, people kept saying to me, hey man, just so you know, it's never going to be this good again. So like, I'm like, okay. And then like, we're at Sundance, and it's like a 1400 people there at Eccles Theater, sold out. Kirk D'Amico, who runs Myriad, financed the movie, awesome guy, leans forward and is like, dude, it's never going to be this good again. And it was just amazing because that's sort of like exactly what it was. It was just like, I can't believe it's happening. I can't believe it's an original idea. I can't believe everyone is like really on board. And, you know, I mean, and granted, you know, you put Shirley MacLaine in a movie and then you say it's going to be directed by Mark Pellington, a lot of people, and you're going to shoot in Los Angeles. Like, a lot of people are going to be really interested in that. And so that was awesome that they did it, you know, not for the money. They did it, you know, for the love of the story and of those people. And that was really just like, it's like, I'll never be able to top it. Like, I'll never forget that. That was amazing.
what was it like to watch Philip Baker Hall perform your dialogue?
It's amazing, and he was just, he's the nicest guy in the world, and that was another one where, so for him, I was just like, oh my God, Paul Thomas Anderson movies, you know, like he's delivered their lines and he's been in that scene, and just watching him was just like amazing. And he's just obviously he's a great actor, but he also just has that kind of that face that you just lean in and like want to be his friend. And he's just so, you just like want to sit there and just talk to him about whatever. And he was like that. He, after takes or whatever in between stuff, he hung out, would talk to people, really just the warmest, nicest guy. That scene with him and Shirley was amazing to behold. To watch that. And if I remember correctly, there were people, Mark included, I think, who were tearing up watching that. It was amazing to be like just a few feet away and seeing that energy.
Man, that's incredible. I mean, I was tearing up watching it. I mean, everything halts at that moment in the film, and it's just, it brings the house down. That is so emotionally charged. Gosh. Mm-hmm. That's such a great scene. What were some of your influences when it came to this film? Whether it was literature or other films. I mean, aside from what we, briefly approached with McLean as or Aurora Greenway in terms of endearment,
right?
And big star.
I thought a lot about. I think I always sort of saw this, and Mark as well, almost as like a fable in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And there was sort of a Capra thing just in my head, and I don't know, like. I mean, it's like I hate to even name references because these are just like such great movies. But, like It's a Wonderful Life was certainly something that I thought about. And then in sort of terms of the world and centering it as much as possible in the real world, certainly like a lot of James L. Brooks stuff. We talked a lot as references to how Ashby, Harold and Maude to a degree, and what else? We talked about like directors and feel, and we talked about Cameron Crowe and Linklater. And Jason Reitman, just sort of like, we're just like in terms of like a feel and what we were sort of going for and how we sort of saw it. Those are things that like, I would just sort of say my references, like what I was thinking to Mark and then he would, do whatever. But, those are sort of like, where my head was at when I was writing it.
What, as a writer, what do you think are some of the best written films?
Oh,
screenplays.
Yeah, that's a really good question. One of the films that I love the most, it's my favorite, I don't know, is Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Oh, wow.
And I was thinking a lot about it with Martin Landau's passing. But that's a movie that just slays me. And I think it's brilliant, and it's juxtaposition of crimes and misdemeanors, and how it's, but with the Martin Landau and Angelica Houston stuff mixed in with then the Woody Allen, Alan Alda stuff. I just think it's, I love it, and I think it's really amazingly well written. I mean, I feel that way a lot about a lot of his stuff, especially of that era. But you know, that's a film that I go back to a lot. And then another film that I love the script for is Flirting with Disaster. David O. Russell.
Mm-hmm.
I love that movie. I love that script. I think when I started writing, I think the first thing I ever did was I bought the scripts for Jerry Maguire and Flirting with Disaster, and then maybe The Apartment as well. And I just read those and just sort of studied them and, you know, learned as much as I could from them.
How long have you been a writer?
I probably first started writing about 10 years ago, but I stopped when my daughter, who's now 9, was born. I think I just stopped for like 4 years. I was busy in my day job, my advertising career, and I was, you know, just being a father, a new father. So I really stopped, and I wasn't sure I was going to pick it up again. And then one day you come up with an idea and you're like, oh, that could be a good idea. And then, you know, you write it and then, you know, hopefully something will happen. And I was super fortunate that it did.
And before you know it, you're at Sundance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Are you writing anything currently or have anything that you're trying to pitch?
No, I've been working on a couple things. You know, truthfully, like I'm struggling to get a little bit out of my own head right now. It's like it's the amazing thing. This is the double-edged sword is I learned so much. I'm really proud of The Last Word, but then like watching it being made and edited and come together and everything, like, you know, I feel like I now know so much more about writing than I did before, obviously. And mm-hmm. So it's harder to just write as freely, as I was doing before. So I'm like, it's like a weird problem to have. So I'm just trying to get out of my own head and just keep writing.
Right. Now, I don't know if you'll know the answer to this question, but I'm always fascinated by it. This film, I do believe, got put out on DVD, right?
Yes. Yes, it did.
I find that fascinating. That it's still... What's it feel like to have a movie to still come out on DVD? I think that's pretty cool. Because I still buy DVDs,
yeah.
Even though I'm like a total lush for Blu-rays, and I haven't made the conversion to 4K yet, but that's right around the corner.
You know? I can't get over the fact that people are watching it in airplanes. I had somebody tell me they saw it on their way to Singapore, and I was like, that completely tripped me out as much as anything. The fact that it's like it's the movie that they're showing on airlines. Just totally surreal. Yeah.
I never thought about that. You know, it's like people can watch it on their phone or their iPad now.
Right. Yeah.
That's
exactly.
Crazy. Back from the era of VHS.
Yeah, I know. Right?
You know, and recording stuff from VHS tapes. Wow. So somebody watched it on an airplane, huh?
Yeah, it was like, yeah, that to me is like bizarre. And then the fact that I had a friend who saw it in Italy and a friend who saw it in England. And then there was like, I saw a poster, from, I think Taiwan. Like that's just, it's like impossible to like wrap your head around.
Wow. At any point when you were writing this, you have some very good lines of dialogue for Harriet.
Thanks.
Some very good ones. And at what I'm curious to know that when you wrote these lines, were you just like, yes, that's it?
That's an interesting question. I felt like I knew that character. I started saying earlier, like I that whole thing, she was sort of created because I was like answering a question, like who would want to have their obituary written while they were alive? And I ended up like writing like just 10 pages of just like, it's almost like a Wikipedia entry about this woman and just, you know, everything about her that I could think of to sort of make her seem real. And so when I ended up writing it, the script, she came pretty easy. And some of those lines just sort of like came out and you're just like, I could just imagine them being said and just like that sort of snappy sort of dialogue that I was sort of going for. In the hands of someone like Shirley MacLaine, you're just like, oh, that could be really good. That could be like really fun.
Right. You know, I remember when I first watched the film, I sent you a message like instantly from the line that Shirley MacLaine gives, that ambition is neutered by self-doubt. And I was just like, oh my God. I'm like, way to sum up like 80% of the people that I know. You know? It's like, holy shit, man.
Yeah, thanks. I know. I mean, you know, I think we all...
And I mean, that even sums up me to a certain degree, too. You know, I think that sums up everybody to a certain degree.
Yeah.
It's universal.
Yeah. I think, that character, the character of... I mean, that was a Shirley line, but talking about that Anne, the character played by Amanda, you know, that was like a character that was a little bit harder to write because it's someone who's sort of searching and someone who's sort of just sort of living life a bit on the sidelines. And when Mark met Amanda and then I met her later, she got that. She got that character. She really brought a lot to it. And she, like, I don't know, I think she helped the script. I think her performance sort of made that really come alive so that when that line is delivered, it does sort of make sense to that character. And I do sort of think there's like just millions of us out there who do feel like they've got ambition, but there's just, you know, this, that doubt is just sort of getting in their way.
Yeah, man. Without a doubt, that was a bad pun. But yes. Yeah. And the other thing that I really enjoyed, this is small and it may be a more so personal thing for me, but seeing Tom Everett Scott in a movie really brings me back to like the 90s, you know, that thing you do in American Werewolf in Paris. And do you know how that came about?
I would just say that our casting director, Heidi Leavitt, she's amazing and she brought people in, and Tom Everett Scott came in and he's just so likable. You just love that guy. And I think he walked in and I think we were all like, we love this guy and he's amazing. And I'm really happy to see that, like, you know, he was then in La La Land, and now I think he's got a TV show coming on. Like, I'm all for the Tom Everett Scott resurgence.
Right, I was going to say.
He's amazing.
Yeah, I was going to say the Tom Everett Scott renaissance. It's like, yes.
Yes.
You know? And
yeah.
Like you said, he's in La La Land, and he's utilized perfectly in that with his affability because, you know, he's the husband, and you can't hate him. Because it's Tom Everett Scott, so you just instantly know he's a good guy. You know, it was great to see him in your film, and I also particularly very much enjoyed Thomas Sadowski because I was a big fan of Newsroom, and I thought he delivered Sorkin's dialogue rather well, which I think is a difficult thing to do, and I you know, not to get off on a tangent, not a tangent, but not to get off the rails too much. I think it's apparent when somebody can't deliver Sorkin dialogue, and I think Newsroom had a little bit of a problem with that. But anyway,
I will just interject to say I agree with you, and I one of the times I talked to him about, and I even talked to him about that, I was just like, you were amazing. I was like, you were my favorite thing on Newsroom. Like, I totally agree with you. Like, that dialogue, it just was, is just so perfect coming out of his mouth. He's amazing. I think he's a great, great actor.
I do too. It was very cool seeing him in the film. This film is a great cast, man. I mean, it is a great, it's a stacked cast. It really is. You got Joel Murray in it. Gosh, Joel Murray's great.
I know. How awesome is he?
He's like, great,
amazing.
Man. I know.
Yeah.
You know, there was a, you know, I guess we're in a Joel Murray resurgence a little bit too, between Mad Men and The Leftovers and God Bless America. God, the guy's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, you got a nice...
Also, like, the nicest guy in the world, told, like, just fantastic Mad Men stories. You know, like, it just was like, yes, Joel Murray is awesome. Like, just a really, really nice guy.
Gosh. And then, Anjuli Lee Dixon. Where did she come
from?
She is amazing.
Right? This girl's going to be a star.
How old was she when you guys were filming this? I don't know how old
she was. I think she was 10. I think she was
10.
She had never been in, I don't really think she had really done anything before. She was someone that Heidi found and brought in, and she was, I mean, amazing. And she's like 180 degrees from that character. I thought Mark did a really great job with her, but so did Amanda. So Amanda came in to read with her, and when she was auditioning, and everyone, but Amanda was like, yeah, this girl's amazing. And she was so sweet, just a real pro. She wasn't the most confident swimmer, but she took lessons, and she was a real joy. And her family is great as well. Her mother and sister came around a few times, and I got to see them at Sundance, and they're just fantastic people. I hope only the best for Anjuli.
Gosh, it's she's insanely impressive in the film because, you know, she is sharing the frame with Shirley MacLaine, and she's not being drastically overshadowed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, how many times have you seen a film where somebody of the tier of Shirley MacLaine's in it, and the other person, or even if it's a even if it's not a child actor, it's kind of like obvious that the other person's out of their element. You know what I mean? Not once has that happened with this, with her performance.
I have this memory. I have a photograph of this. When we were at the motel, the motel sequence, I remember, I was walking around the grounds, and I saw Shirley and Anjuli by themselves, like underneath this beautiful tree on this little bench, rehearsing together and just going through lines and just talking. And, you know, Shirley was so great with her. She was great with everyone, but at the end of the movie, like, everyone sort of felt like Shirley was like it's like a den mother type of thing, you know, just congregated to her. And so she, you know, Shirley and Amanda and Mark, I mean, what they brought, how they helped Anjuli in the movie was just, like, amazing. She's great.
Gosh, and then my tirade about the stacked cast, I'm looking at my notes here, and I totally would be remiss if I didn't mention Anne Heche and then Stephen Culp. Gosh, they're both great, too.
Yeah, that was amazing. The Anne Heche thing was so cool because, Mark and I talked like it's one scene. It's a powerhouse scene. It's a lot of the movie's driving to this, and like we sort of wanted it in our heads to be like, when this woman walks in, you know, the audience is like, ooh, yeah, like, this is going to be good. Like, it's like showdown at the OK Corral.
Right.
And Mark was like, hey, you know, let's get Anne Heche. And I, of course, was like, dude, amazing, you know, whatever. And she was like, she was like, oh, I get to play Shirley MacLaine's daughter, and you're directing, Mark? Done. In. And, like,
wow.
She was on board, and she came in, and she had that hair, she had the short hair, which was amazing, and, like, she just crushed it, and it was so, like, that was, again, that was another day that was just, you just sort of sat there and watched with your just jaw, you know, open, like, the acting that was going on. It was really, it was superb.
Were you anticipating being on set for this? Did you and Mark talk about this beforehand, or did he just kind of invite you and said, like, hey, stay at my house, be on set?
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't, I think, well, I don't know. Mark was always like, hey, man, you know, you know, Mark, he's told me, you know, like, he loves writers, and he loves having writers on set. And I remember him telling me that he really learned to think that was a great thing, doing a lot of TV, episodic TV. So he was like, yeah, man, come. And so I was like, all right. And I had a job at the time, but I was like, I'm going to do this thing. And
right.
They were like, great, go ahead, buddy. And so I went, and, you know, I mean, I was just there to really just to sit and just, like, soak it up. But it was, you know, like, that was amazing. It was just, you know, I mean, just being able to watch, you know, and see how it's all constructed and how the whole thing's put together was amazing. And the other really cool thing about it was, and you don't really think about this, is that everyone who works, like, on a movie, you know, they're like the best in their field, you know, like, I mean, like, the person doing the costumes, like, she's, you know, compared to everyone in the world who wants to have that job, you know, she has it. And, you know, same thing with, you know, the DP and everyone on set. They're all, like, just brilliant at their jobs. And that was so exciting to just be there and just be around just, you know, really smart, creative people, like, doing something that they loved. And just trying to sort of soak up that energy was, it was inspiring to be there, actually, to be surrounded by all of that creativity.
How long was the shoot? You may have said that earlier. I can't remember.
I think it was, I want to say, like, 23 days,
okay.
Maybe. Yeah, I think it was, like, 23 days.
Wow. And that's so cool you got to be there for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. How surreal of a feeling was it when you were at Sundance watching your film premiere?
I can't even put it into words. My wife came, which was awesome. Because, like, otherwise I would have just floated away. Like, I just needed, you know, like, a rock there. Yeah, it was thrilling. And there was a Q&A afterwards, and I was invited up on stage, and Mark actually invited everyone who worked on the movie who was there up on stage, which was really cool of him. And a young woman actually asked me a question, which I wasn't expecting anyone to ask a writer a question, but she was, like, the same age as Amanda's character, and she was just she asked about just the she was speaking about how that struggle she understood it, and I was like, man, that's it, like, it's done, like, I'm at Sundance on stage and someone said the movie, like, you know, meant something to them, like, that's, like,
you've arrived,
like, that's it, like, that's, it's like, I'm really happy now.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Good for you. This is, thank you. I mean, this truly is a touching film. And, you know, I feel like we get so used to seeing films that are trying to be the last word or last word-esque, where it truly is heartfelt and touching, that people, I don't want to say are turned off by it, but they're like, oh, I've already seen this movie, or, but this isn't that movie. Like, everybody needs to see The Last Word. I mean, it's available on Amazon Prime, but do Stewart and Pellington a solid and buy this film on Blu-ray or DVD, or if you have to, digital download, which I've had to do from time to time. But, I mean, you know, moral of the story, I mean, this is a film that truly celebrates art. And I think it's important for people to see this. And that's why I've been, you know, softly beating the drum for it. And I was so excited to have you on to talk about this.
Thank you. It was great to be on, man. I really, really appreciated it.
Yeah. Do you have any last word, Mr. Fink?
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
no,
I even laughed out loud at that one.
That was good. That was good. I like what you just said. I mean, our purpose was like, our aim was like, we wanted to just tell a story that wasn't cynical, it wasn't ironic, just like a nice way to spend, you know, like 2 hours or 95 minutes, and you know, maybe you walk away with something, you know, but hopefully like just a smile on your face. There's just like, we just wanted to tell that kind of story. And yeah, I think some people were like, oh, it's predictable, or I've seen it before, but yeah, I'm not really sure they have. But that's me saying that, but yeah, I'm proud of it, and I think everyone in it did an amazing job.
Right, and I mean, it isn't a movie you've seen before. I mean, sure, you've seen characters like this before, and I hate the term of it, but it's coming of age. We've seen these characters before, but you haven't seen it like this before, and that's why I think it's important. Plus, it's got a bitchin' soundtrack, which I need to emphasize one more time. You know what I mean? It's everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the iconic Shirley MacLaine. Amanda Seyfried's great in it. It's got a great supporting cast. It's got a great soundtrack. I mean, it's directed by Mark Pellington, man. You know?
There you go.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it has the line that rumbles around in my head, you know, a couple times a week. Ambition is neutered by self-doubt. I mean, seriously, that's you know, that's stuck with me.
Yeah, that's great to hear.
You know, I watch tons of movies all the time, but that has stuck with me. That's a great line.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. But yeah, like I said, if you have to, you can watch it on Amazon Prime, but please buy the disc. We at Podcasting Them Softly very much like to support the world of physical media, you know.
Amen to that.
Right. Except my floors are starting to cave in a little bit at all the DVDs I have all over the place. But no, seriously, I think this is a film that deserves a huge audience, that deserves to be bought on physical media. So I've got the Blu-ray, and hopefully you got a nickel or whatever it is that you receive from that.
I should look into that.
but yeah, thank you. And I would love to have you back on, you know, whether or not it's about your next project, or if you want to come on and talk Crimes and Misdemeanors, that would be great.
Oh, yeah.
Or Flirting
Maybe.
With Disaster,
yeah.
Which I haven't seen in forever. And now I'm definitely going to rewatch that because you name dropped that. And geez.
Yeah. It's give it another shot. It's amazing.
Considering David O. Russell's kind of turned a new leaf in his career, I've kind of forgotten about Flirting with Disaster, so thank you for reminding me about that.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the front half of David O. Russell's career.
You don't like the newer stuff? I haven't seen Joy. You don't like his newer stuff as much?
I just feel like, I do, but not as much. Like, his earlier stuff I just thought was really sort of idiosyncratic and just a little bit offbeat. I even Silver Linings I mean, Joy, I thought was better than people thought it was. The fighter, I don't know. Like, that's just not what I want to see him doing.
Right.
I think he's wildly, wildly talented.
I
don't know what I want to see him doing, but I want to see him do something different.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I for me, the shelf life on the fighter is not nearly as strong as it was when I saw it in theaters. I remember when I saw it in theaters, I was like, holy shit, this movie's great.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
You know, I find the rewatch. But I think American Hustle is like the best movie Martin Scorsese ever made. Gosh,
yeah,
I love that
sure.
movie. But
yeah,
I definitely need to go back and watch Flirting with Disaster now. So thanks again for reminding me about that.
Yeah, of course.
But one more time, I'll remind everybody that The Last Word is on Amazon Prime. And you can also buy the discs where discs are still sold in stores, if they are anymore.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was a real treat. And thank you for thank you for coming on. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing what you write next.
Oh, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it.
You're
this
welcome.
This was fun.